most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
To Sports Talk on this Thursday afternoon with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We've got a lot in store. We look forward to taking a trip down memory lane with T. Martin a little bit later this hour. As coming up this Saturday, it'll be the 98th Florida game. So the former Tennessee quarterback and passing game coordinator and wide receivers coach for the Volunteers will join us at 3:35. So we'll talk about that game and more. Then we also look forward to catching up with a couple of Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame inductees, as we have former Maryville basketball coach Randy Lambert, as well as longtime pitching coach Mark Connor, former Tennessee baseball coach. Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com pinch hits for Brent Hubbs today. That'll be in hour number three of today's show. And you have some teams able to get back and start practicing, and one of the first teams to do that was West High School. So the head coach of the Rebels, Lamar Brown. So Jimmy Himes, welcome. Hope your day is off to a great start, and look forward to another full edition of Sports Talk today.
Yeah, we certainly do, and we've got so many things to bring to folks with the interviews that you outlined. Really looking forward to catching up again with T. Martin. We'll go ahead and get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. So there have been a couple of magazines that are out so far as preseason. We've already talked about the It's Football Time in Tennessee magazine done by Don Carringer that's been out on the newsstands for at least a week. Athlon has come out with theirs. Street & Smith has theirs. Athlon has Tennessee ranked number 26. Street & Smith has Tennessee 21. Football Time in Tennessee had Tennessee in the top 20. They also have they indicate that four of Tennessee's opponents on the schedule are in the top eight. That's by both magazines. They both pick Florida over Georgia. And, John, I wrestle with that. I do the picks for Lindy's, and I took Florida over Georgia, too. I took them because I have more faith in Kyle Trask than Jamie Newman. If Newman ends up being a really good player, better than Trask, then Georgia win it. But I ended up going with Florida. Trey Smith is a first-team All-American by both magazines. Eric Gray is fourth-team All-SEC. Now, this was interesting. John Adams said he thinks that Gray could lead the SEC in rushing. I'm not that optimistic about it. I do think he's got a chance to have a really good year, but I'm not in the potential to lead the SEC in rushing yet. Second team All-SEC, linebacker Henry To'o, and then fourth team, cornerback Bryce Thompson. As expected, the NBA voted 29-1 to accept the 22-team deal in Orlando with the teams that are in the top eight positions, as well as four others from the West, one from the East. They also set the draft for October the 15th, the draft lottery August 25. With the draft set for October 15, I may be wrong, but I can't help but think that would be a more push for Eve Pons to return to Tennessee. He's really got, the way I see this, no chance to improve his draft stock. And because of that, I think he's going to come back. Now, he may prove me wrong, but that's the way I read that. Do you see that any differently?
No, I do not. I just think the timing is something. Granted, again, we're dealing with something completely and totally unprecedented. I am surprised that perhaps it would be as late. I mean, you could already be playing another season before the NBA would have its draft. And so, and there's talk that if indeed the NBA season finishes, I guess in October, potentially, if it's a game seven of the finals, they said October 12th could be the date, that you might not see the next season start until Christmas Day. So it's really going to take some getting used to. And as we talked with Mike DeCourcy yesterday, what makes college basketball able to stay on time is if college football is on time when it begins. And I thought it was a wonderful point by him as to whether or not we will see perhaps as close as a regular academic year in progress this fall.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good point on his as well. The one thing that I look at with the NBA, I think that they should start a little bit sooner than Christmas Day, because number one, you're probably going to get a pretty good response to your season openers. And then you're going to probably get a really good response on Christmas Day. I'm not sure if I would open on Christmas Day to sort of cheat myself out of the viewership I might be able to get for the opening days or opening week. So that's what I would do, but gosh, they hadn't asked me. But anyway, I think that might be a better
it's on your voicemail.
Yeah, there you go. The better plan. All right, NASCAR returning to Nashville 2021. They're going to have a cup race there. It's been about a decade since they had anything. They held Xfinity races and truck races there from 2001-2011. Dover has relinquished one of its dates, so Nashville is going to get that one. Also, no fans at the Brickyard. That's at Indy. That's July the 4th, the Indy Motor Speedway. They also have an Xfinity race there, NASCAR the next day, but apparently they're not going to have any fans for any of those races. Correct, John? Isn't that the
correct
projection?
Yeah, the doubleheader on July 4th, the NASCAR race July 5th. It will be without fans in the stands.
All right. A few other notes out there as we bounce around. A decision on the Ryder Cup is going to be made at the end of June. It is set for September 25 to 27 in Wisconsin. Steve Stricker, the coach of the USA Ryder Cup team, said without fans, it's a, quote, yawner. I think others would probably be in agreement with that. Rafael Nadal on the U.S. Open, he said that if he was asked today, he would not play. He said you can't restart unless it's safe for the players and unless all players can travel. So we'll see what happens with that. Gosh, I overlooked this note. Let me go back to Tennessee football for just a moment with these preseason magazines. So Athlon has four of Tennessee's opponents in the top eight. But after that, according to Athlon, Kentucky's ranked number 32, South Carolina 47, Missouri 52, Arkansas 74, Vanderbilt 96. Those are the SEC other SEC opponents. UAB is at 63, Charlotte at 89, Troy at 111. On paper, Tennessee should win all of those games. That's eight wins. Now, of course, we know what happened at the start of last year, but Tennessee should win eight. If they can find a way to beat one of those teams in the top eight, then that is, I think, it's going to easily propel Tennessee into the top 25, if not the top 15. So we'll see if Tennessee can take care of business. While we're on college football, there was an Oklahoma State football player that tested for the virus earlier. He had been to a protest rally in Tulsa. Now two more Oklahoma State players have tested positive. You've got Lincoln Riley, the head coach at Oklahoma, is concerned about the boundaries in which coaches will be tested upon players returning. He said that, quote, voluntary, close quote, workouts, that's a loose term. And he's probably right about that. So we will see. But I think folks need to be very careful in terms of how they handle this with the return of players. We talked yesterday about there were some positive tests down at Ole Miss. And so we just need to be careful. Everybody needs to be really careful and not jump into this thing and think act like everything is over. All right, Mike Miller, who'd been on the staff at Memphis Basketball for a couple of years under Penny Hardaway, he has left that staff. A former ETSU basketball player, Bo Hodges, who made All-Conference last year, is transferring to Butler. West High School has hired a boys basketball coach. He is from the Tennessee staff, and that is Aubin Gaporo. He is director of student athlete development at the University of Tennessee. This will be his first head coaching job in high school in 5 years. He was at the Florida Air Academy in Melbourne, Florida from 2000 to 2015, where he had a record of, get this, 355-52. He won four state titles in Class 3A. He had more than 40 players that went on to play in Division I. Last year, Wes was 11-16. They don't have a very good history in basketball. They made state only once, and that was in 2011. So we'll see if Gaporo can get that turned around. All right, with Major League Baseball, we'll see where this thing goes. Hopefully they'll get some resolution. The owners obviously – here's the situation, basically. The owners lose more money the more games that are played. The players make more money the more games that are played. And that is, of course, without fans. I did read once again that this agreement in March was dependent on fans being there. Some are disputing that, but I read that once again, that was why the owners agreed to the prorated salary. So if the players don't come off the prorated salary, then the owners only want to play 50 or so games, because that will cut their losses. The story I read said that the teams will combine to lose $640,000 for each extra game that is played, and they don't want to take that kind of a bath. The players would get about 70% of their salary if 114 games are played, but if they play and if they go by that proposal, then the players get like 89% of the revenue and the owners get 11%. And I still don't know what happened to that proposed 50-50 split we were hearing about, but apparently that's they're not going in that direction. So anyway, my hope is that they can reach some resolution and play. All right, a couple of other notes out there. Michigan State, their athletes can return on June the 15th. There were some athletes that tested positive. There were two that tested positive there. Oregon State has dismissed a redshirt freshman tight end, Rocco Corley, because of a recording in which he used racial language. In the Olympics, Japan is preparing to downsize the Olympic Games next year. They will have far less seating, and that's going to leave millions with tickets sold in limbo. So we will see what happens. It's a long time away, but we'll see what ends up happening with the Olympics. Drew Brees came out and made a statement that he just could not support anybody that disrespects the flag. He got a lot of backlash from that. He came out and apologized to anyone that he offended. He said he missed the mark. He said that it breaks his heart to know that he caused any pain to anyone. Some players accepted the apology. Some weren't so gracious in accepting the apology. But one of his teammates, Demario Davis, came out and said that the apology was a true sign of leadership. And then Sean Payton responded to that and said that Davis is a special person. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens in that clubhouse. The Saints were to have a meeting, I think, today. But we'll see what happens with that one. As far as the WNBA, Las Vegas and Florida seem to be the top sites for the WNBA to play. They're going to play all their games in one location if the season is held. There's been no date set for a tip-off for the 2020 WNBA season. Our congratulations to Jackson Bostic. He is our senior athlete as we are honoring him. Brandon's Awards an engraving is our sponsor for that. We congratulate Jackson for this award. He is not only a tremendous athlete at Grace Christian, he is committed to Carson Newman. He was a three-sport athlete, track, football, and basketball. He set 10 school records in track, a six-time All-State selection, a two-time state champion in the 300-meter hurdles, six-time All-State. And he also was a New Balance National qualifier. So congratulations to Jackson Bostic. Also, Bowling Green has reinstated baseball. They had announced they were going to drop it, but they got some funding that is going to allow them to continue to have baseball. Japan, they've got a preseason game that was canceled. Two players tested positive. So that brings up this issue. What happens in other sports when players test positive? Now, we know what happened in the NBA when Rudy Gobert tested positive. They shut everything down, and that was on the front end of all of this virus situation. So now what happens? Well, there's talking about quarantine, putting them in quarantine for 14 days, but then you got to worry about the people that might have been affected. John, I think it's just going to be an interesting situation that is faced by a lot of sports when you have athletes that test positive for COVID-19.
Yeah, and being able to trace, track, interactions, things like that. I'll be very interested to see exactly what the policies and practices that are put in place and whether or not it's going to be basic as, say, coming down from the NCAA, from the SEC, individual schools. Who has the leeway to do what with exactly how they approach it?
Yeah, that is going to be interesting to see what plays out there. I saw this, and I'm not – oh, here was another note. We were talking about Bowling Green, which was good news. Wright State is dropping softball, and both tennis programs are trying to save $2 million. So we're seeing that happen. The thing I don't know about is, yes, I know that they're going to be losing revenue, and, yes, I know that they're dropping sports in an effort to save money. But in a couple of years, if things clear up and financially they become more solvent, are they going to add these sports? I don't know. Maybe they need some boosters to jump to the table and make some donations like they did at Bowling Green to reinstate baseball. But I just wonder, if you've dropped a sport now, how difficult is it to revive that sport in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? And, of course, nobody really knows what that's going to look like, but I just wonder how hard it would be to reinstate a sport once you've dropped it.
Call the folks at UAB football.
They did a pretty good job, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yep. So those are our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. 656-9900 is how you join us. 656-9900 puts you on Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Let's go to the phones and say hello to Jim, who joins us. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Jim.
What a week it's been when you have two of the most iconic and legendary coaches in the SEC pass away and just, in a period of just a couple of days. You know, I still have images of seeing Chancellor Jack Reese at a podium starting out a press conference by saying, after an exhaustive search, which brought laughter from the House because the hiring of Johnny, there was no exhaustive search. Johnny's hiring was not thought to be any kind of a search. It was a coronation. And you talk about, we talk about this home run hire. Man, there wasn't a more perfect match for a Tennessee football coach than Johnny. Tennessee needed Johnny a lot more at that time than Johnny needed Tennessee. Johnny really sacrificed to give up the national championship team in terms of maybe going forward with that for some more after that, to come back and rebuild Tennessee. And Tennessee's cupboard was not well stocked. It was fairly bare. I was very surprised yesterday listening to Bobby Majors talk about the fact that Bobby did not want Johnny to come to Tennessee because he knew what Johnny had going for him at Pittsburgh, and he was also fearful that if it doesn't go well, he didn't want that, legacy tarnished. He didn't want Johnny to have to suffer because if things didn't go well. And I never knew that story of how strongly Bobby felt.
I didn't either.
That was new to me. I'm going to tell you two quick stories, and you may have seen both of these, although one preceded you, Jimmy, in Knoxville. When I loved Johnny doing the Johnny Major show with John Ward. And after the Notre Dame game of 79, Johnny, they're on the set, they're behind a desk, and Johnny from underneath the desk pulls out an Irish shillelagh and pounds it on the desk. And John Ward's looking at him, and Johnny's telling John Ward, "You were much too serious last week, John. We've got to put some energy into this, blah, blah, blah." Well, the week before, it was serious because they had just lost to Rutgers. And John Ward was going, wait, this isn't in the script. And it was funny. The one you may remember, both of you, followed the 91 Notre Dame game when Johnny and John are doing the show, and Johnny's talking about the field goal. And to do this prop, he's got to stand up. So he stands up, and he has to walk out in front of the desk. And he's talking about touchdown Jesus. And he's laughing as he describes this. And he says he looked up and he saw, so the camera can see Johnny's full body. And so he's describing touchdown Jesus giving the no good sign for the field goal as he's You guys remember that?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Uh-huh. And he's laughing so hard, he can hardly get it out.
But well, you remember John Ward initially said the kick was good.
Yes.
And had to correct it. And I had a neighbor that was out playing golf, and they got in, and they listened to the end of the game. And when John Ward said no good, they turned the radio off.
Uh-huh.
And so my neighbor drove home. I saw him the next morning, and he was like, boy, it's a shame they lost that game to Notre Dame. I said, no, they won the game. He said, what? We were both walking out to get our newspaper, and he said, no. I said, hey, John Ward corrected himself. My neighbor, Dewey Warren.
Oh, my. That's unbelievable.
He stewed all night thinking Tennessee blew that game until the next morning.
That's incredible. You know, I'll leave you with this because you have personal interaction with this. I loved having Johnny come on the show, your show, for a number of years, you know, once a week during football season. But the thing that always tickled me was when Johnny would get on your show, he was kind of like a wild stallion with the stories. He'd go from one story to the next, and you guys are kind of like trying to rein him in just a little bit to get to your next question.
Hey,
and
Jim,
I always thought that was fun. What was that like?
Well, a sidebar on that. So he told me if I get to rambling, you need to give me a signal to stop me. So my signal was to hold up my fist. Well, apparently he didn't have very good vision because that signal never worked. He didn't pay any attention to that.
That's
I should have held up
funny.
My fist.
That is funny.
He blew through several stop signs.
There you go.
John, were you in Neyland Stadium the night Johnny made his return?
77?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I was not because my dad had two season tickets. He was part of the athletic board, faculty representative. So we had two really good seats. And right next to Dr. Milligan's seats, and so two tickets, three kids. So we rotated. So I did not have that original draw. But I will say this: I did come across the other day because when you have free weekends when you don't expect them, you go through a bunch of stuff. Came across my actual ticket stubs to the 82 Alabama game.
Oh, wow!
So I have a huge artifact that I just uncovered.
Wow, that's pretty neat.
It's got the world.
Well, I enjoyed all the interviews yesterday. They were terrific. You know, he's a legend, legendary coach. He will be missed. Well, guys, always good to talk to you. Have a good afternoon,
Jim. We appreciate you very much. Thank you for calling in. And Jimmy Himes, we look forward to talking about this upcoming. We have a couple of big things to talk about with T. Martin, but. We have the Vol Network Classic, the 98 Tennessee-Florida game that will air this Saturday at noon on these very airwaves.
Yes, and T. Martin is going to join us. We look forward to visiting with him, the quarterback that snapped that losing streak to Florida, the quarterback that helped lead Tennessee to that coveted national championship.
That's next on 99.1, the Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes, and we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, Jimmy, for a very special guest.
Absolutely. We are pleased to be joined by T. Martin, former Tennessee great quarterback. He's a receivers coach at Tennessee now, and we appreciate him taking the time to join us to talk about the Tennessee-Florida game from 1998. T., how are you?
Doing great. How's everybody doing?
Well, we're doing fantastic. Thank you for joining us. Hope you and your family and everyone is safe.
I appreciate that. Same to you.
Yeah. Back in 1998, so let's talk about that Florida game. The week before, you are at Syracuse, and Tennessee pulls that game out with the late field goal. Just talk about how the win at Syracuse maybe helped you and gave you a little bit of momentum going into the Florida game the next week.
Right. It did those things that you just mentioned. Going into that week of Syracuse, of course, it was my first start as a quarterback and was very nervous and things like that in the first half and kind of settled down in the second half, played a little better, and we won the game. But I remember in preparation for the Syracuse game, we were all over the place on offense. You know, we had a good day, a bad day. And I remember having an awful practice right before we got on the plane to go to New York, and we just didn't know how we were going to play. But what it showed us was that we were good enough to be special, and we didn't know where those plays were going to come from. We didn't know how good we were going to be, but we just knew we were good. And so for me, I came back and collected my thoughts in preparation for Florida and just said, listen, you know, if we do the right thing, take care of the football, run the ball well, play great on defense, we can beat this team. And we went into that game very confident, feeling that we can win. No one doubted that we can win the game, and that's what we did.
How much confidence did it give you to make a huge play late in the game against Syracuse to help set up that game-winning field goal?
Well, it was just they started playing a lot of man-to-man. And remember, Cedric Wilson did the PI call, and they were starting to get more aggressive in the man-to-man coverage. And so for me, whenever I saw man-to-man, I knew that scrambling was an option for me. And they did a good job of covering our routes and took off to get us in field goal range. So just kind of taking what they gave me there.
So you open with the win, and then you have Florida coming to town, and the Gators had won five straight before that matchup. What was the mood? What was the mindset? And what was the atmosphere as you guys made your way on the Vol walk to the stadium?
Oh, man. I just remember the energy and the focus and just the attitude of knowing that we were going to win the game. The whole week, we just prepared like we were the better team and never – had any of that negative talk about Florida. You know, it was all about Tennessee that week. It was all about us taking care of business, and we didn't make the game any bigger than it already was. And so that's what it was. We had a team meeting during the week, early in the week. Myself, Al Wilson, kind of led the meeting, and we just talked to the guys about these guys are just like us, man. Let's go out here and play ball, and we're going to win the game. And that's pretty much what happened.
From your perspective, what was it like to see the defense come up with the plays when they needed to? It was kind of a bend but don't break. When Florida got close, Tennessee found a way to knock it away and just simply create turnover after turnover. What was it like for the offense that night, knowing that the defense really was locked in and forcing Florida into mistakes?
Yeah, you're talking about the number one and number two defenses in the country that game. You know, that team was loaded on defense, and our defense did a really good job in the red zone. Florida, of course, was alternating quarterbacks, and we didn't know how they were going to do that, but we still understood it was going to be Steve Spurrier's system, regardless of who was that quarterback. So we just focused on the plays, and I thought we did a good job of preparing for them on defense and not allowing them to score points in the red zone on a few opportunities that they had. And it kept us in the game to where we can make plays late on offense to send the game into overtime and ultimately win.
Tennessee only had 235 total yards, but there was a big play that you helped make, the touchdown pass to Peerless Price. Take us through that.
Yeah, you know, that game plan, I remember them, you know, being a 43 defense, and, you know, you had big Javon Curse playing Sam Backer, and earlier in the game, they gave us something up front, so we audible to the one play to Sean Bryson that broke it for a long touchdown. So that was another thing they would do in the secondary that once it was available to us, we would take advantage of the one-on-one coverage with Peerless. And they didn't show it until right before halftime, and we discussed it on the phone and attacked it. And, you know, Javon was right in my face and I had to get the ball up and over him to get the ball in the air, and the ball kind of floated, but Peerless had beat the DB so well that he was still open when the ball got there. So it was just a great play. We really needed that play to swing the momentum going into halftime.
Did Curse hit you when you threw it?
Oh, yeah. I didn't see the catch. I heard the crowd. You know, we kind of went down to the ground. My hand was in his hand, and, you know, I was on my back and saw the crowd and heard the crowd cheer and touchdown.
There was also, a 57-yard run by Sean Bryson. From your vantage point, what did you see on that play opening up for Bryson?
Yeah, it was an audible that we had in our package that if I saw them line up with a certain way up front, that I would check to that specific run. It was called 40 Lion. And so basically I was looking for a three technique up front, and when they gave it to me, I made the audible, and it was perfect. Sean Bryson, you know, we were blessed to have a fullback that was a 4.3 40 guy, you know. So once Sean got to the second level, we knew no one was going to catch him because he was outstanding.
The game gets to overtime, and so when you have something that you've played four quarters and the issue still isn't resolved, what is it like? What's the mindset as you go out and for the coin toss and all that goes into setting the stage and tone for that extra time?
You know, for us, when you've been beat by a team for 10 years and then you go to overtime with them, for you, you're excited because the games before that weren't that case. You know, you lost. And so we had the opportunity to go into overtime. Everybody who came into that game confident, knowing that we can win the game, that was like confirmation. And you really felt like this is where we want to be. This is where we should be. And let's just finish the deal. And that's what the feeling was like, you know. So we were very confident that we could make some plays in overtime to win it. That's what happened.
So when you get the ball first and you come away with a field goal, how much do you close your eyes? How much do you hold your breath when it's the defense's turn?
Yeah, you know, just put it in their hands. You know, they have been, like I said, the red zone defense and how they played in the red zone that whole game was fantastic. And, you know, when you're in overtime, you're in the red zone the whole time. So basically they did a great job of stopping them and holding them to where they had to kick a field goal, and they missed the field goal and missed on the field.
So, T, did you watch Collins Cooper attempt that field goal?
I can't remember if I watched it or not. I know I said a prayer right before it happened. And I think I watched the ending of it, but mm-hmm. from my viewpoint, I really couldn't tell, like, if the ball went through the uprights or not. You know, sometimes based on your view, it kind of looks the same. And so I can't remember. I know at the very end my eyes came up, but I don't know what I was doing right before.
So did you know that he missed it because of what you saw or because of what you heard?
No, what I heard, the reaction. Yeah, the reaction. You know, I kind of looked at the goalpost, and I was like, well, what happened? I saw everybody running on the field, and man, I just joined the crowd. So that was a big moment. That was a great moment for everyone, and it was a weight lifted off of our shoulders that had been there for some years as a program, and it was good for the projection of our program moving forward.
You mentioned joining the fans on the field. Did you stay on that field for quite a while to celebrate with the fans?
Yeah, you couldn't get off the field. You know, I mean, you got goalposts coming down and cameras and fans everywhere and students and people that, you know, were just so happy. And you wanted to enjoy that. You know, that was one of the few times during the course of that season that I kind of stood on the field to take it in, you know. And so it was just a spectacular moment to celebrate with our fans and our student body.
Did you find yourself dodging any of the goalposts?
No, I didn't get close to the goalposts. It ended up in my parking spot at my apartment.
Really?
My apartment was on the strip behind the Pilot gas station, and I got done with everything, took a shower, did interviews, and ate with my parents, and then once I got home, the goalpost had made its way to my parking spot at my apartment. So that was pretty special.
I'd say so. Is that the loudest you've ever heard Neyland Stadium be?
Yeah, to my memory. Well, the very first time I ran out, because I had nothing else to compare it to, my very first game as a freshman in Neyland, I don't know if I caught my breath till about halfway through the first quarter, but other than that, man, it was loud. It was pretty loud.
Well, you mentioned, just as John Ward said, pandemonium reigns. Everybody charges the field, and so people want to have the souvenir. So the goalposts come down, including a CBS camera that was attached. And then you also had people that were taking up big chunks of the grass. And it's like you guys had a game the very next week, and it was pretty interesting. Where you had a game, and your next game was a home game. The very next week. And what was that like, knowing that, hey, we've got to leave something so you could play Houston?
Yeah, no, you know, I didn't see all of that, but I heard the stories, And but it's all fun, man. It was all a part of it all. It was all part of that experience. It was glad that we were a part of it, and that we could bring that kind of excitement and joy to our fans, you know. But yeah, I heard about that stuff. I couldn't see it myself, though.
You talked about the weight being lifted off your shoulders, and I know you're supposed to play one game at a time. But T, after mm-hmm. Tennessee beat Syracuse and then Florida, did you think somewhere in the back of your mind, this team is capable of winning a national championship?
You know, Jimmy, it was hard to think that way at the time because, you know, it was the first year of the BCS, and we were mm-hmm. not understanding how they were calculating points and ranking guys. And, you know, we just felt that if you win, there has to be some good in that. But how much, you know, when everybody's talking about the point margins and all these different things that would rank one guy higher than another guy, we didn't understand it really. We were just trying to win the games. And so you had to turn your attention to the next week. And we just did that each week. I think our coaching staff did a great job of keeping us focused on the next opponent and not so much, you know, over enjoying the past opponent. You know, so that's how you get beat. But basically, we just focus on the next guy every week. And we had certain challenges every week. You know, we had a couple games where, you know, we lost our leader in Al Wilson. We lost Jamal Lewis. We had a couple challenges along the way. And it always brought about a new motivation for us. And that's what made that journey special.
I thought for much of the first half of that season that Tennessee was conservative with you. I don't know, maybe protecting you a little bit, however you want to word it. But at some point, I thought they turned you loose. When did that happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was, you know, when you're in my shoes and have been sitting down for 2 years, you're like, man, it's my shot. Let's go. And then, you know, we were just handing the ball off a whole lot, and I'm kind of being a spectator for most of it. And so, but, you know, when you're a team player, you don't think about it at that time. Although sometimes you wanted to compete more and have more of an something to do with it more, I guess you would say. And so, but when Jamal went down, we had to rely more on being more balanced on offense. And Travis stood up and stepped up for us in the run game. Our O-line did a great job. And then, you know, down in South Carolina, really, we just kind of opened it up in terms of the passing game, and it ended up being more of us the rest of the year. So I would really say how I remember it. It was around that South Carolina game that I actually knew going to a game that we were going to try to throw the ball. I can't say I thought that going into many other games before that, that we were going to focus on the passing game.
T, one thing that really stood out about that team, and it was good on offense, defense, special teams, whether it was needing David Leverton to make a tackle or the offense to strike when the iron was hot or the defense to turn the ball over, have you ever seen a team that had the ability to make exactly the play it needed to most at the appropriate time?
You know, that's a great way to put it, because that was the true story behind that team. And that's what made that year so special for us all being a part of that team. It was, you couldn't just point the finger at one game or one person or one side of the ball. Everyone included collectively had their opportunity to step up and make their plays, and they were ready, you know. So a lot of credit is given to the coaching staff that prepared us for that. You know, every day that we went on the practice field, it felt like the SEC championship. And so when we got in those moments and we got in those tight corners, we weren't panicking because we felt that we do this every day, you know. And when you talk to people who have won championships and things of that nature, that's what they always talk about. It's the preparation was always harder than the actual games. And those are the memories that I have of that season and what the character was of our team that did something so special.
Hey, T, by the way, on the night after that Florida win, where did you park?
I don't know where I parked. I think somebody parked down the street or another parking spot in my complex, but I can't remember. I was having a good time.
Well, yeah. You should have.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one, Jimmy.
That's still the record for a home crowd at Tennessee in Neyland Stadium that night, that game.
It was awesome, man. There was a feeling in the air. I think it was just that time, you know. And I'm just happy for everybody who have this memory to live with.
T, you've been able to, of course, be connected with all of that you've done as an assistant coach, and then also have seen a couple of your sons start to go through the process. Amari Rodgers doing what he's done and winning a championship, a couple at Clemson, and the incredible career he's had. And you've also got Caden, who's doing such a great job in two sports. What has the process been like to either shepherd, steward, or just watch opportunities come to your sons now?
Well, it's just such a blessing. You know, it's something that when you're a young man, when I was in college, I always wanted to experience that one day with my kids. And I didn't know how it was going to happen and all of that. I can only dream of this, right? And just so proud of my kids for just being good people and just being hard workers. And just being good teammates with their teammates. That's all you can ask for as a parent. And I can't say that I even saw this happening for any of them. But, of course, you know, we're a sports family. We wake up in the morning. We work hard. We study the games. And we're very supportive of each other. And so, and we pray. So, you know, that's kind of been the result. And I'm just so proud of them as their dad to see them doing what they're doing.
Well, those prayers worked against Florida in 1998, so keep praying.
Yeah, you got it, bro. You got it, man. That's what we need.
Thank you so much. Really do appreciate your time, and congratulations again on that great 1998 season.
Well, thank you all for having me, y'all. You guys have a great weekend. Take care.
Thank you, T.
You as well.
All right.
T. Martin, former quarterback at Tennessee, star quarterback for Tennessee, talking about that big Florida win in 1998.
Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back to close out this first hour of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
99.1 The Sports Animal. Just because your workday is boring doesn't mean your radio station has to be.
So why'd you come?
Why did I come here?
Yeah, why'd you? Because
it was, well, I'd say some of it was ego and some of it was pride. I mean, a challenge of pride. I said, well, I can be the so-called hero, I guess. It's great to be able to bring your alma mater back.
Final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and that's part of a conversation between John Majors and Halloran Hilton Hill as he joined Halloran. And we'll share a lot of memories like this, not only today, but tomorrow, and who knows how long. But Jimmy, just always one coach, was always very free with his time, always happy to tell stories, and it's good to listen in on some of these incredible clips.
Well, it is, and certainly he was great to cover. We've had so many wonderful stories told about him, so many great responses. We wrote a blog about it, and I tried to do justice for the relationship I had with him, but it was hard to do since he's such an iconic figure. And folks want to go to our website to check it out. But he was just so much fun to be around, to cover, to interview, to have him on the show, and a great personality. And like with that Shillelagh deal, you just never know where he might be coming from. But I thought it was funny. We're talking about having a great sense of humor, and his brother Bobby said, "What are you talking about? I didn't really see that sense of humor." But so I got a kick out of that. But anyway, so many wonderful stories about a wonderful man.
Yes, so we look forward to sharing those with you. And, of course, we've got a lot more coming your way today on Sports Talk. In fact, Jimmy, we continue to highlight what I think is as outstanding a class going into the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame as we've seen, and we will have two honorees that we catch up with this next hour.
Yeah, we look forward to being joined by Randy Lambert, longtime basketball coach at Maryville College. We'll also have Mark Connor, baseball coach. He was a head coach at Tennessee in baseball, but he spent so much time and coached so many great pitchers in the major leagues.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Hour number two of Sports Talk is next as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.